I know you're out there. I know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. I don't know the future. I didn't come here to tell you how this is going to end. I came here to tell you how it's going to begin. I'm going to hang up this phone, and then I'm going to show these people what you don't want them to see. A world without rules and controls, without borders or boundaries. A world where anything is possible. Where we go from there is a choice I leave to you.
The Chris Ann Hall Show.
Any varmint that crosses that lady's path has met its match. Come on!
Rise and shine, liberty-loving patriots. Welcome to the Chris Ann Hall Show. Chris Ann Hall here, KRISANNEHALL.com. Liberty over security, principle over party, truth over your favorite personality. Welcome to the Truth Station. Welcome to the opportunity to be challenged by a liberty first perspective. And that's hard sometimes because those challenges bring questions against our favorite personality and our favorite politician. We ought not be so personally invested in these people that we ourselves become offended when we challenge them with what they've done or what they need to do. I mean, I've seen people get offended personally when I've pointed out that their politician is not operating exactly the way they're supposed to, not operating according to their constitutional promise. Listen to what Thomas Jefferson had to say about himself. He said, if the people once become inattentive to the public affairs, you and I and Congress and assemblies and judges and governors, all shall become wolves. He says it seems to be the law of our general nature in spite of individual exceptions. He says an experience declares that man is the only animal which devours his own kind. We need to make sure that we are watching these people all the time. Jefferson said, if once, I mean, just for a second, you stop being attentive to your politician. Just 1 second of closing your eyes, Jefferson says, that person will become a wolf. A wolf. They're ruthless. They devour everything. If you know anything about wolves, they will kill just for the sake of killing. I have a friend, her name is Debbie Bacigalupe, and she is monitoring this resurgence of and the reinsertion of wolves into our rural lands. And they're watching these wolves slaughter entire herds of sheep, not because they're hungry, just for the kill. And Jefferson says, man is the only animal which devours his own kind like a wolf and will slaughter just for the sake of slaughtering. If once we stop paying attention to what they're doing, if once we stop watching and pointing out when they're doing things that are wrong, we can't be afraid to do this. It can't be based on party politics. It can't be based on our favorite personality. It's got to be based on liberty first. And you know what our Congress did yesterday? They passed another balance, another budget increase. Another stinking budget increase. Raising our debt again. How can we even tolerate that in a debt that's $17, $18 trillion? And now we're going to increase spending by $50 billion this year. And they say only $30 billion more the next year. But see, that's the whole budget lie, isn't it? This idea that we're controlling the budget in the future. Is anybody noticing that we have the same budget crisis at the same time every single year, even though we are told we get a budget that is projected out 10, 15, 20 years? I mean, that was the big Ryan budget last time, right? we pass this budget now, and we'll never need another one again. Because if you let us spend today, we will gladly cut the budget over the next 10 years. See, just this year, we will be spending. Just this year, we will be spending. And then for the next 10 years, we'll cut the budget and reduce our spending. We'll tighten the belt. We'll get real diligent with reducing the deficit. You know, that's been going on for at least the last 4 years now. At least the last 4 years. I want to tell you that it's probably been happening since 2010, when Congress was taken over by that Republican majority. That promise of reducing the deficit, because now we have fiscally conservative people in the majority in Congress, and we're going to reduce the budget. And then we're going to spend this year. We'll spend this year. No, it's okay, it's okay. We're okay. We're really, really, we promise, we're okay. We will spend this year, and then the next 10 years, we will reduce our spending and cut our budget. But every single year, every single time, this time of the year, we have a new budget crisis. We have to continually raise the debt ceiling and promise to cut spending again. See, look, this is how they cut spending too. They don't actually cut spending. They cut this spending increase. See, they're going to tell us that we've cut spending. See, we're going to increase spending this year by $50 billion. But we'll cut spending next year because we're only going to increase next year by $30 billion. Please somebody tell me how that makes any sense whatsoever. That is not a decrease in spending when you're still increasing by $30 billion. We're going up $80 billion in spending in 2 years. And they're trying to tell us it's a decrease in spending. Oh, no. It's a decrease in the increase. We're increasing $50 billion this year. We're only going to just a little bit of increase of $30 billion next year. How crazy is this? And you know, the last year we had this budget crisis, right? We got this budget slammed into us. You've got to know what this, you don't even have time to just vote. You got to pass the budget to know what's in the budget, right? And Boehner said, I promise I will never do that again. He issued a pledge to America, which says, I quote, we will ensure that bills are debated and discussed in the public square by publishing the text online for at least 3 days before coming up for a vote in the House of Representatives. No more hiding legislative language, he says, from the minority party opponents and the public. Legislation should be understood by all interested parties before it's voted on. That's a direct quote from John Boehner. Really, at least 72 hours. Didn't happen again. Nope. Didn't happen again. We became inattentive, and they started all over again and became the wolves. 144 pages of text. I read it. I have it right here in front of me. It's absolutely insane. It doesn't make any sense at all. Well, because it refers back to text. So you have to, like, do all this cross-referencing to see what's been changed and what stays the same. And there are really no numbers. No, I mean, very few real numbers in this. You see, you have to know past budgets and do the math and the algebra and the calculus and all this stuff to understand what's going on. But listen to the table of contents for this thing. Section 101. Amendments to the Balanced Budget and Emergency Deficit Control Act of 1985. Wow, there's a clue for you. We've been having emergency deficit control since 1985. Section 102. Authority for the fiscal year 2017 budget resolution in the Senate. Section 201. Standard reinsurance agreement for agriculture. Excuse me, if we're going to have a constitutional budget to begin with, there's not going to be a section on agriculture. Congress has no business spending money on agriculture. We're going to talk about that later in this show. what Congress has the authority to spend on and what they don't. Agriculture. In reinsurance agreement for agriculture, Section 301, Commerce, Debt Collection Improvement. I'll let your imagination run wild on that one. What exactly is debt collection improvements in the Section 301 of Commerce? Section 4, Strategic Petroleum Reserve. There are four sections. The Strategic Petroleum Reserve, Test, Drawdown, and Sale Notification and Definition Change, Mission Readiness Optimization, Drawdown and Sale, Infrastructure Modernization Fund? Really? No. Congress has no business funding the infrastructure of petroleum. That should be done by private businesses who are making the profits on this petroleum. Do you see? We are subsidizing private industry so they have a greater profit margin. We are creating infrastructure for them so they have a greater profit margin. How does that make any sense? This table of commerce tells us this table of contents tells us exactly what's wrong with Congress. Pensions, single payer employment annual premium rates, pension payment acceleration, mortality tables, extension of current funding stabilization percentages to 2018 and 2019. Healthcare, Section 6. Maintaining 2016 Medicare Part B premiums and deductible levels consistent with actuary fair rates. Applying the Medicaid additional rebate requirement. Treatment off-campus patient departments of a provider. Repeal of automatic enrollment requirements. Are you seeing this? We could wipe out billions of dollars of spending by just not having a healthcare section. We have a judiciary section, Section 7. A Social Security section, Section 8. And it goes on and on and on and on and on. It's crazy. Temporary extensions of public debt limit, Section 9. Section 10, the Spectrum Pipeline. What business does Congress have involving themselves in the spending of money on pipelines? Hey, this is ridiculous.
Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
I have to tell you about this budget because you're certainly not going to believe me. I wish that I could somehow show you this piece of legislation because I have the table of contents in front of me right now. And Section 12, after revenue provisions related to tax compliance, partnership audits and adjustments, partnership interests created by gift. Section 12. See, this is why we have to have a shutdown of the government, because we have these really important issues to deal with. Because if we don't pass this budget, we won't pass Section 12. Do you know what Section 12 says? Designation of small house rotunda. Section 1201, this vital piece of legislation that if we don't pass, the government will shut down, will designate the small house rotunda as, quote, the freedom foyer. What does this have to do with the budget? What does this have to do with increasing the debt ceiling and making sure that you and I have a balanced budget and we can keep government operating the way it's supposed to? Designation of small house rotunda, designating a small house rotunda as the, quote, freedom foyer. This is just how ridiculous government has gotten America. And until we realize that we are spending way out of control. way out of control. You look at the roll call of this. There were 70, let me catch this number up here real quick, 79 Republicans who voted in favor of increasing this debt ceiling. John Boehner was one of them. And oh, oops, our new Speaker of the House did exactly the same thing as John Boehner. Oh, surprise! Hey, Paul Ryan, America, welcome to the new boss, same as the old boss. You think anything's going to change? No way. Paul Ryan made tyrannical demands of people in Congress before they would vote for me. Yeah, I'm not going to run unless I have control over the House. We're not going to have any more of these overturning of the Speaker of the House. If I become Speaker, we're going to change the rules so it's harder for you to challenge me. I'm not going to have any opposition. If I have any opposition, I'm not even going to run. If I can't get the Freedom Caucus's endorsement, then I'm not going to run. He's already a liar times three. Because he did not get the Freedom Caucus endorsement. And he's still running anyway. And guess what? He'll be our new Speaker of the House. And he's voting to increase the spending and doing exactly the same thing that John Boehner is doing. And I'm looking at this map online. North Dakota, your only Republican voted yes. Oregon, your Republican, Greg Walden, voted yes. I mean, this is crazy. You know, I'm looking at the map of New York, and I'm wondering, why does New York even have two parties? What is the purpose of having a Republican and a Democrat in New York? It looks to me like they all vote for big government no matter what. There's not a single person in New York that voted against this spending increase. I mean, you've got Vermont, well, they're all blue anyway. Maine, their Republican voted yes. You know, it's crazy. I live in North Florida. And North Florida is known for being split. So you go through to North Florida, you go to the I-4 corridor. And north of the I-4 corridor, we are supposed to be conservative, unless you get around the state capitol. You get around our state capitol, and everybody who lives around our state capitol, they're all uber liberal. So the only place in North Florida where the liberals control is around our state capitol. Imagine that. And so anyway, you know that if you go north of the I-4 corridor, you're going to find the most, you know, statistically conservative people. It's pretty much all red, even though, you know, we can't say Republican conservative anymore because the Republican Party does not police its own. But here you go. In North Florida, in the northest part of Florida, nearly Georgia, okay, you have Ender Crenshaw, who is voting yes to increase the debt ceiling as a Republican. Hey, Crenshaw, you're not a conservative.
Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
So now that we know that R does not mean conservative, okay, let's just be clear. We cannot generalize. R does not mean conservative. And in most cases, when you're talking about R, you're talking about conservative R, you're talking about R who loves money, right? And so they're usually, you can usually, you know, rely on them to be fiscally conservative. But not even in this case now. We have 79 R's. 79 R's that are now not even fiscally conservative. So isn't it about time for the R's to start policing themselves and start kicking out those who don't even remotely resemble R? I'm just asking. Where are the people who are supposed to be watching their government, right? If the people once become inattentive to public affairs, you and I and governors and judges and councilmen and everybody on the planet will become wolves, Jefferson says. Listen to what Samuel Adams says, and I want to say this to every single person who voted for this budget increase. Because you see, this budget increase increases government wealth and decreases the wealth of the people. Samuel Adams gave this presentation before the House and said, "If ye love wealth better than liberty, the tranquility of servitude than the animating contest of freedom, go from us in peace. We ask not your counsel or arms. Crouch down and lick the hand which feeds you. May your chain set lightly upon you, and may your posterity forget that ye were ever our countrymen." See, that's the kind of vigilance and statements and passion we're supposed to have about our future. If you voted for this debt ceiling increase, this spending increase, you are wicked, you are evil, and you are selfish. You are a selfish parent who says, "I would rather have my own comfort and my own wealth today and put that on the backs of my children and make them pay for my comfort." That is a wicked, selfish parent. Thomas Paine said, "If there be trouble, let it be in my day, so that my child may have peace." And what are we doing? What are we doing? We are strapping debt to the backs of our children for our own comfort that's not even necessary. America has an addiction. America has a government addiction. American has a government service addiction. And that addiction is feeding the wealth and greed of these wicked, wicked politicians. Yes, John Boehner is wicked. Yes, Paul Ryan is wicked. And we cannot support this anymore. We need to get a better understanding of what government is supposed to be doing. We have to know that our government is completely and totally out of control. Shut down. What does that mean? Shut down. Do you know there doesn't even have to be a shutdown? Because you see, the House, with a simple majority. I mean, look at this. We have a vote here. A budget passed of 266 to 167. That is sickening. That is absolutely sickening. If 79 Republicans voted as real fiscal conservatives, as their party said, we would have had... 167 plus 79, doing the math in my head here. 246 to 187. 246 to 187 could defund Obamacare, could stop this wickedness spending. 246 to 187. And that's what we have. We have a government that is absolutely wicked and spending more than they're supposed to. They're really out of control, and you know what we can do? We can learn from these lessons. Things began going awry for the federal government rather early. An expansion of congressional power through forced construction of the General Welfare Clause is one of the chief culprits. That's why they justify everything today. A great example of this can be found in the congressional arguments surrounding the Cod Fishery Bill of 1792, a bill to subsidize the cod fishing industry. In this, James Madison defines the proper nature of government to a House wanting to unconstitutionally expand its own power and reach. Madison reminds us, he says, "I, sir, I have conceived, and I believe those who proposed the Constitution conceived, and it's still more fully known and more material to observe that those who ratified the Constitution conceived that this is not an indefinite government deriving its powers from a general terms prefixed to the specific powers, but a limited government tied down to the specified powers which explain and define the general terms." Yes. We are supposed to have a limited and defined federal government. Madison was very simply explaining that the clause, the common defense and general welfare, was not meant to expand the power of the government beyond its limitations, but to describe the purpose for the power delegated within a strict confinement of those boundaries. In other words, the clause does not name a power. General welfare is not a power. It simply describes the purpose for the powers named. Meaning, when you engage in the delegated, the properly delegated federal powers, the purpose is for the general welfare of the Union. You can't engage in a properly delegated federal power which benefits one state and detriments another. You can't do that. You have to make sure that every action of the federal government benefits all the states as a whole. Not one over the other, but all of them. And with amazing foresight, John Adams explains the consequences in 1792 of allowing the federal government to turn the clauses into defined powers. Look at what he says. He says, "If Congress can employ money indefinitely to the general welfare, and are the sole and supreme judges of the general welfare, they may take care of religion into their own hands. They may appoint teachers in every state, county, and parish, and pay them out of their public treasury. They may take into their own hands the education of children, establishing like manner schools throughout the Union, like curriculum, common cores." That's exactly what he's talking about. "They may assume the provisions for the poor. They may undertake the regulation of all roads other than post roads. In short, everything from the highest object of state legislation down to the most minute object of police would be thrown under the power of Congress." He says, "For everything I have mentioned would admit the application of money and might be called, if Congress so pleases, provisions for the general welfare." He says, "I venture to declare it is my opinion that were the power of Congress to be established in the latitude contended for, it would subvert the very foundations and transmute the very nature of limited government established by the people of America." Let's turn James Madison's statements around just a little bit. Let's take him, because he's saying, look, if we allow government to do this, we are changing our constitutional republic. We are changing the very nature of who we are. He says, if you allow the federal government to take all these things. So if we take that in the negative, then we can simply know what the federal government's not supposed to do. The federal government is not supposed to be the sole and supreme judges of general welfare. They are not supposed to take religion into their own hands. They are not allowed to appoint teachers. They are not allowed to pay teachers or schools out of the public treasuries. No federal funding is allowed, according to the father of the Constitution, for the maintenance of schools. They are not allowed to take education into their own hands. They're not allowed to dictate to the schools their curriculums. They are not allowed to mandate and maintain roads throughout the Union, except for post roads, which are those small sections that transverse each state. So you move from one state into another. That small section that links one state to the other is a post road. That's it. Everything else. And I suppose if you want to take a liberal interpretation of post roads, the only thing that you could liberally interpret as a post road are interstates, the big interstates. There should be no federal funding for anything beyond the main interstate thoroughfares. That's a very liberal reading of this. You see, the federal government is not allowed to get in the middle of state legislation. The federal government is not allowed to be involved in our police. That's what James Madison says. And when they are in these things, he says, we subvert the very foundation and transmute the very nature of limited government established by the people. But in 1831, we're at it again. Once again, Congress attempts to reconstruct its powers through the artifice now of charity. This time, the argument is about supplying wood for the poor of Georgetown. The mayor of Georgetown sends a letter in 1831 to the House of Representatives asking for relief of the poor of that city and soliciting the House to grant a donation of some wood in the vaults of their capital for their use. It sparked a forgotten but very relevant debate of today. Now, the first to speak up in this debate is Congressman James Polk, a Democrat of Tennessee, who will be the future 11th President of the United States. And in a showing of moral character and commitment to the Constitution that is rarely seen today, James Polk takes a stand that I wish we could see in Congress today.
My right to tote the weapon of my choice. Don't censor my voice. Hate me if you won't, or love me if you can. If the truth is what you want, then you found your man. I ain't backing down, I ain't backing up. If you think like I think, then crack it on up.
I won't back up, I don't back down. I've been raised up to stand my ground. Take my job, but not my gun. Tax my shit till I ain't got none. You stand for
Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
So in 1831, we have Congress trying to increase their power under the argument of charity. Oh, but you see, it's our job to take care of the people. And general welfare means welfare, which means we are supposed to be taking care of the welfare of the people. That's the job of the states, not the federal government. And James Polk said he knew it would be viewed as being ungracious to oppose the resolution on behalf of the suffering poor of the district or any other. But he went on to oppose the resolution of the House and to offer this as support. Quote, "The precedent of appropriating the public funds for such a purpose was a bad one." End quote. He said he reasoned that if they allowed this seemingly small act of charity, then every winter, when snow fell, he says, or the Potomac was frozen, applications would be made to Congress, and members of Congress would be engaged in the dignified object of buying and stowing wood to give to the poor District of Columbia. Polk opposed this spending on the principle, he says, as the House had not the power to make the donation requested. And what began with Georgetown would blossom in a dependency throughout the nation, he says. And it was not the amount he objected to, but that the legislators came to legislate on great concerns of the nation, not to give away public property. And he made a final plea to the House with their vote to put a check on legislative power. Now the next one to argue is James Blair. Blair gets right to the point that it's not the power of Congress to give out donations from the public treasury for the purposes of charity. He says, if so, it would have the power to vote millions of the public money to feed and clothe the suffering of the poor. The House had no right to give away public money for any such purpose. And if gentlemen were disposed to be liberal, he says, let them be liberal with their own money. And then he moved the floor with the following substitute by way of amendment. He says, quote, that the sergeant-at-arms be required to deduct from the compensation of the members of this House on a day's pay and deliver the sum to the mayor of Georgetown to be applied to the purpose of fuel for the paupers of that town, provided, nevertheless, that such deductions shall be made from the compensation of such members only as a vote in favor of the resolution. Are you catching that? If Congress wants to be generous, they need to be generous with their own paychecks and stop being generous with ours. What a novel idea. Why don't they engage in charity out of their paycheck and their kickbacks and their special interest donations? I think we could learn something from this lesson. The first thing that should be striking us is that the money collected from the people is not revenue, but public property. That spending public property, Congress is limited by the proper confines of the Constitution, not ones established through force construction. And personal, catch this now, personal moral integrity could inhibit Congress from violating points 1 and 2. You see, a little bit of moral integrity, and we could have a real constitutional budget. If we just simply stopped spending on the things that we're spending on that simply are completely and totally unconstitutional, then we would have a balanced budget. We would have a surplus in America that we would not even know what to do with. Prosperity beyond recognition. But instead, we have people like John Boehner and Paul Ryan and the 79 R's that voted in favor of this debt increase, that said, you know what? I'd rather be comfortable today and make my child pay for my luxuries. If you love wealth better than liberty, the tranquility of servitude than the animating contest of freedom, go from us in peace. We ask not your counsel or arms. Crouch down and lick the hands that feed you. May your chains sit lightly upon you. And may posterity forget that ye are our countrymen. You disgust me, and you need to go. God bless. See you tomorrow. We came to life.